How much protein do you need after exercise for building muscle? Are you really wasting protein if you eat more than 25 grams? Or what about more than 40 grams? Is there a benefit to eating more protein in that post-exercise window? If you're into protein, always looking to maximize your recovery, muscle building, and maintenance, stay with us for this week's podcast. Welcome back to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. This show is hosted by myself, Dina Griffin, and my co-host, Bob Sibahar. We are both registered dietitians, board-certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. Our mission here is to translate nutrition and sports science research to real life, give you some awesome interviews with a variety of experts so that you can enhance your knowledge, optimize your health, fitness, and athletic performance. So on today's episode 116, we're talking about a research paper that came out in late 2023 about the anabolic response to protein ingestion during recovery from exercise. And we're going to highlight the study findings, talk about what it helps answer in terms of some questions that you may have or other questions you may hear, and also discuss some of the new questions that this research paper actually fosters. So it's pretty cool. If you're into nerdy science, you definitely want to be with us. If you're into protein, stay tuned here as well, or just looking to learn more about where the research is in terms of using protein to maximize the muscle building response after exercise. Before we get to the show, speaking of protein, if you're struggling to find snacks that have decent level of protein, you're going to want to check out the All Around Snack Company founded by our sports dietitian, Bob Sibahar. So the All Around Snack Co. has very yummy, tasty snacks. They're low in added sugars. They don't have dyes, colorings, or additives. They do contain a decent amount of protein, so this is going to help you control your blood sugar, have steady energy throughout the day. And the snacks are good for kids, families, athletes, really anyone. So check out the goodies over at allaroundsnackco.com. And if you want to save a few bucks, you can use the code ISNPODCAST24, and that'll get you 15% off your order. All right, let's get to episode 116.
Well, Dina, my magic number today, and we are recording this in the morning, so I've only had to consume one, or I've only had one feeding, but my magic number so far is 35. I want to know what your magic number is, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but let me just kind of put it in reference here. I have consumed 35 grams of protein so far this morning. How about you? Roughly speaking, how many grams have you put in the body?
I'm probably around 28.
Okay. Yep. So listeners, why are we bringing this up? Well, today we are uncovering and chatting about this new study that has hit the press, and it is hot. Like, I can't even tell you the amount of media this research article has gotten. So Dina and I are going to chat about it, and it's all about protein. But let me just get this over with, D, because it's a kind of a long title. So let me just read the official title of this article for our listeners. And we'll, of course, put this in our show notes. But the title of the article is "The Anabolic Response to Protein Ingestion During Recovery from Exercise Has No Upper Limit in Magnitude and Duration in Vivo in Humans." Wow. So when we saw this, one, that's a mouthful, by the way, but that's, you know, listen, that's how researchers do this, right? Yeah. But two, it kind of piqued my interest, Dee, because I'm like, wait a second, there's no upper limit in how much protein we can now, well, I wouldn't say eat, but actually use during meals or during feedings. And, you know, if you recall, you know, we've talked to some great, great protein researchers really kind of about this topic. And I'm sure, you know, their Instagrams and Twitters are lighting up because of all this too. But this article is really challenging what we have literally been taught and known for, I don't know how many decades, D, back in the days, right? I mean, yeah. We're still doing it, but really, you know, the onus has been from research and saying, you know, we should eat about, 25, 35, maybe 40 grams of protein per meal. And above that, our body just doesn't use it. It just oxidizes it or kind of gets rid of it essentially, right? So that's kind of where we're sitting with this. And now that this paper has come out, you know, we've got some stuff to talk about. But I wanted to start with how many grams of protein we've each had so far this morning, because listen, I've had 35. I've got a shaker bottle with 50 grams of protein in it. So I'm trying to get up to 85 by the end of this episode. We'll see if that's possible. Now, I will tell you this, D, my 35 grams of protein this morning came all from protein powder and collagen, right? Powder, right? Mm-hmm. Because I made a smoothie. And I, you know, it's tough, listeners, to get, you know, I love protein powder. I know Dina does too. We don't want to depend on it all the time. But listen, if you're trying to get a huge bolus amount of protein, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, D, but when I drink a smoothie, it kind of fills me up because it's a lot of volume. It's a lot of liquid. So I've made mine really thick because I didn't want too much fluid because I knew it would fill me up. But so I'm on my way to trying to consume 85 grams of protein by the end of this episode, right? I'm at 35. I don't know if I can do it. Like, I'm pretty sure myself most of the time, D, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Wow. This is a fun new twist on podcast recording, Bob, and nutritional challenges. Yeah, I mean, it is, when you think of 100 grams of protein, it's one thing to talk about it over the course of a day, but looking at even what you're saying, 85 grams and crunching it all in, chunking it all in to a short period of time, it's not something we're used to trying or even understanding, like, is that useful for any sort of reason other than maybe some of us actually do enjoy that, but I will look for the update here in a matter of minutes.
Well, I just took a couple sips and now I'm even more full. But yeah, here's the thing. So this study looked at, and we'll get into a little bit of the methodology. We're not going to go deep dive into this one, but just so listeners know, this study looked at three different dietary interventions with protein, a placebo, a group that consumed 25 grams of protein, and a group that consumed a 100 grams, and this is after exercise. So this isn't during the day, right? And Dina, I don't know how many athletes you've worked with, and you know, you're proposing, because we both do this, like, hey, you got to increase protein, got to increase protein, you know, and we do the milligram, early grams per kg of their body weight, and they're freaking out. They're like, how much is that? Like, I feel like a lot of our listeners, like, I don't even know if we could do 100 grams of protein a day, let alone in one feeding. So let's keep our minds open during this discussion, both Dina and I and listeners, because we're going to pick it apart. Obviously, this is the first study to really make waves in this new protein research. So let's get into it a little bit, Dee. What do we know about what they did in the study? And who, maybe who they studied.
Yeah, just kind of setting it up a little bit so we understand, the study design. So I'm trying to be somewhat brief here. This was a study with the participants being young men. I think between, originally they allowed like between age 18 and 40, but when you look, most of them were in their 20s and they were recreationally active. So part of the study requirement was that they did some exercise, but these weren't uber trained athletes from my understanding. So I think they were excluded if they did more than 3 sessions of exercise per week. I don't think they were permitted. So they were active enough, but not sedentary, not uber athletic. So in total, I believe they recruited or had 36 individuals in this study. And they went through some basic testing screening in the beginning there to just make sure everyone was meeting the criteria. But as part of the study design, looking at trying to control diet for the couple days beforehand, and it looks like most of these were eating fairly standard American dietary pattern, 60% of their calories coming from carb, 25% from fat and the rest from protein. But in the study, Bob, they, you know, some of this is a little bit beyond my understanding, like how the heck did you do this? But in the actual intervention or looking at what they did, they had these subjects come into the lab, had them rest, put in a catheter so that they could actually monitor the amino acids in various tissues. So had them rest for a while. And then when they're ready to begin, like the meat and potatoes of the experiment, had the subjects do a 5-minute easy warm up on the bike, around 100 watts, and then put them through a series of strength resistance exercise. So they basically familiarized the subjects to 4 different exercises: leg press, leg extension, chest press, lat pull down. So it was like easy kind of familiarization to these exercises. And then they went through, and I think in total about an hour of all of this exercise, but increasing load for these exercises, trying to get to basically a maximal effort or to failure. And so it probably was a little different for each individual, but you know, at first sounds like, eh, that's not too bad. Only 4 different kinds of exercises, but really it was increasing the load and really getting them to fatigue and to that point of failure. After that, Bob, is when each of the subjects then consumed either the placebo drink or the 25-gram protein drink or the 100-gram drink. And then thereafter, for several hours monitoring different amino acid levels. The charts in the paper are pretty darn nerdy, aren't they, Bob?
They sure are.
So, I mean, there was frequent monitoring, biopsies and so forth, to see what was going on from this, basically like the anabolic response, the amino acid levels. I mean, there's a lot of things that they were looking at, but trying to see, like, was this protein used? How well was it used compared to each of the other amounts? What happened over the 12 hours that they collected data? How much was, quote unquote, wasted or oxidized? And then, you know, really testing some of the previous theories that we only, quote unquote, use 20 to 30 grams of protein at one time in terms of anabolic response in the muscle.
Yeah. So you can think of, like, I'm just thinking like using means anabolic means building up, right? And I want to use the word wasting. It's not really wasting, but not using is oxidizing. So it not for anabolic purposes, right? So I think that's really important. Anabolic means building up and being able to use all of this. And obviously the opposite is also true. And that's really what they were getting at, right? So their challenge was, well, maybe in the past, like back in the days in the research, when these researchers looked at only feeding 25 grams of protein after a workout for tissue anabolic response, better protein synthesis, you know, quote unquote, air quotes, muscle building, right? Or muscle repair. Their question was, well, maybe there wasn't enough time that they looked at. So they're looking at, was 25 grams of protein after exercise enough to get that really good anabolic response? And then they were thinking, and then they were questioning, well, maybe that 4-hour window, because that's what traditionally has been done, is looking at that 4-hour window after exercise and feeding. So what they did was they just quadrupled basically everything, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at it for the most part, I mean, you know, now we're looking at 100 grams and now they actually took it out to 12 hours of collecting data. Now, I would not want to be one of those guys in that study with a catheter in me for 12 hours. I'm just going to say that right now. Yeah, that would not be comfortable.
Yeah. And no other food, no other activity. I mean, it was, I mean, kudos to the research subjects that participated in such a study design.
Yeah. So these researchers, I mean, in Bob's words, you know, I'm like, okay, what they're thinking is they're thinking, if we feed more protein and measure it longer, let's see if there are more anabolic or beneficial responses, right? Now there's a lot of real life things that we're going to get into in a few minutes here, because there are some things we really need to think about when the rubber meets the road. But, you know, one of the things I found interesting, Dee, was like looking at these really geeky graphs, like you were saying. Obviously, if we look at the insulin response, obviously there's a larger insulin response from placebo to 25 to 100, right? So yeah. Obviously the 100 had a really large insulin response. What I thought was really interesting is like after like comparing the placebo, and I'm looking at this chart right now, comparing the placebo to 25 grams of protein to 100 grams of protein, somewhere right around, let's say 4 hours or so, it looks like on the graph, the insulin levels all became the same again, right? So, okay, we're kind of looking at that. What really, and kind of building on that is, you know, they're trying to look at, they're trying to answer the question, who cares, right? If we feed 100 grams, who cares if we can't mm-hmm. use it? And that's what I really feel like this study was looking at. So if we look at a total amino acid graph, which basically says, or is giving us the data and saying, well, how many amino acids are still in the plasma floating around for us to use? Then yes, that 100 grams absolutely is better than 25 grams, because from this graph, the entire time that 100 gram feeding of protein is always higher in total amino acids in the plasma throughout the entire 12 hours. Mm-hmm. Now, what I also found interesting on that total amino acids, so you have more amino acids to be able to use for oxidation or for anabolic responses, is after about 4 hour, maybe 5 hours-ish, maybe a little bit more towards the 6 hours mark, that's where the placebo and the 25 grams of protein came together again, which means after about 6 hours, that 25 grams of protein feeding actually became the same in terms of the amount of amino acids in the plasma as the placebo. So we need to kind of unpack that eventually, but I just thought I'm kind of picking up some really interesting things that I found, you know, throughout this paper and throughout the different feedings. I mean, some of them you would predict, you know, that's the no duh moment. Like, oh yeah, if you're going to feed more protein, obviously there's going to be more in the plasma, but you know, that's really one thing they really wanted to ask. And, you know, they're challenging. And I love this, cause I love it when research challenges traditional knowledge base, but they're really challenging the question of, if we feed more protein, does it actually matter? And that's what I love about this, right?
Yeah.
Because they're trying to uncover this. It's the first study. Listen, listeners, there's nothing conclusive about this. I think they you know, in any good research study, they also provide their own limitations, which they did. Mm-hmm. But I still feel like there's a lot of great limitations. But can we just, you know, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, T. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, I just realized I'm not sure we have yet said what the source of the protein.
That's where I was going with
it. Oh, you were. Okay. Yeah, exactly. We were on the same way. Yeah. Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that this was, I mean, we could just say a milk protein, but it's interesting mm-hmm. when you get into the paper, they explain how they took the cow milk as the cow was, you know, lactating and like labeled through these infusions, allowing the milk to be traceable in essence, right, for when it was consumed by the human subject, so they can more easily see how this protein was being absorbed and oxidized and so forth. So yes, essentially a milk protein. And I think, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, about 20% of whey and 80% casein mm-hmm. is what they identified, which I think is kind of standard for cow milk anyway. But yeah. So anyways, this was milk protein, not steak or right. tofu or anything like that.
Well, and there's no way they'd be able to do this with food. There's, I mean, no, oh, in one gosh. Sitting, that would be very difficult. I mean, I feel like a lot of subjects would have vomited after
yeah.
trying to eat that much. And here's the thing too, listeners, like if you're going to try this, again, I've been sipping on my protein shake here and my stomach is really feeling quite full now. I can't imagine having, you know, whatever it is, you know, two handfuls of chicken or something like that. I mean, and we've got some examples for you at the end, listeners, so mm-hmm. we can kind of realize what 100 grams of protein actually means in terms of food. But, oh, I mean, even just consuming this protein shake has been a little challenging for me. I'm not going to lie.
All the listeners and myself included are keeping tabs on you, Bob. What's going to happen?
Yes, at thank least, you. Thank
80
you.
Some grams.
Yeah. Well, so here's another question I have. Like, this is what we were taught, and some of the greatest protein researchers have looked at this. And they've taught us that, you know, distribution of protein throughout the day is very important for protein synthesis, for anabolic effects of consuming protein. And usually it's, you know, about every 3 to 4 hours, you're having 25, 35, 40 grams of protein, right? But even like, no, like that was the big thing. I remember this specifically. This was probably 15, 20 years ago where I talked to one of these researchers and he's like, you know, the key is to not have too many fluctuations. So not to have a breakfast light on protein, a lunch moderate on protein, and a dinner heavy on protein, or vice versa, or whatever, right? He said it's all about maintaining that very systematic, balanced approach. So the synthesis, the protein synthesis, is even throughout the day. Well, here comes the study, you know, and trying to, you know, kind of upend that. So I'm really curious about that because, you know, with some of the athletes I work with, intermittent fasting is quite popular, right? And time restricted feeding. And, you know, that's one of my questions, which obviously this study did not really address or look at, and that's not part of their study. But well, what does this do to someone that is only eating twice a day? Because, you know, for me, if I'm working with someone who's doing IF, intermittent fasting, the big concern is, how are we going to get enough protein in? Mm-hmm. And could this study now answer that question? I don't know. Right. I think it's way too soon, but I don't know, possibly.
Yeah. And I think that's why we do see some individuals who do the one or two meals a day. And they're training, doing resistance training, but some individuals do not lose muscle mass, even though they're eating within a short window of time and they have these mega protein meals. But body composition, it doesn't necessarily revert to like lower lean muscle mass or anything like that. So it is interesting to try and think of what you're saying, Bob, like the application in real life for a huge amount of protein to be consumed, and maybe that's it, like in a single feeding or a short period of time.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, here's what's going to happen. It's probably happening already, not with our listeners because they're well-educated, you know, but, you know, with some people who are just reading these reviews online or whatever, I guarantee this is happening where they're like, oh, okay, I'll try that. You know, like Bob is trying it right now and they're going to try it and they're going to actually maybe try it for a week or two just to see how it feels and, you know, see how it's working, but they're going to forget. What they're going to do is add more protein into their daily nutrition plan. And fantastic, like all for it, but they're going to forget about the other nutrients. And all of a sudden, I feel like possible weight gain and possible body fat increases, not in a week or two, but long term. I feel like, because that's what I hear from a lot of athletes is, wow, if you're changing one macro, should I change another one? Well, yeah, you should, because there is that delicate balance of these nutrients. But here's the context we need to put it in. What kind of exercise are you doing? Like if you're training for a 100-mile run, I mean, is eating 100 grams of protein after exercise really necessary? Maybe. Mm-hmm. If you're training for CrossFit games, maybe. I mean, you know what I mean? There's a lot of it depends on a lot of maybes. I think we just need to kind of put this in context. What I love about, again, really about this study is they're challenging the whole upper limit. And, you know, I do feel, D, just to kind of put it out there, I do feel like the title is a little misleading because when they say that there is no upper limit, they didn't study it. They just looked at 100 grams. So it should say up to 100 grams, right? There probably is an upper limit, right? And some other researcher will figure that out. But in this study, really, the upper limit is 100 grams because they did not go above that. So let's keep that in mind too.
That's important. Plus, I mean, just thinking practically, let's say the upper limit is 400 grams. I mean, who really, that's a boatload.
I don't know how you do that.
Mega. So it's like, is this even practical? But no, I mean, it was really to look at what has been studied in humans, like you're saying, and challenge some of what we know. So it is expanding that so-called upper limit, but we truly haven't tested that yet.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that I think about, because this study looked at feeding 100 grams versus 25 in placebo after exercise, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not indicating that we should eat 100 grams at every meal. Like this study only looked at 100 grams post-exercise, right?
Yeah.
It's not, it, it's not like if I'm eating three times a day, I'm not going to eat 300 grams of protein or 400 grams of fat, whatever it is, right? So I think we need to keep that in context with our listeners is like, okay, but here's the other thing. I work with some athletes who are training 2 to 3 times a day, Dee.
Yeah.
Is this indicating that we should now eat 100 grams of protein after my hour run and after my 45 minute lift? And you know what I mean? So
yes.
There's so much more to unpackage here, but I love that we're actually going down the path finally.
Yeah. And like you're saying, this did not look at all of the potential health implications, right? This was looking at anabolic response, muscle mm-hmm. building. Yet, I mean, this wasn't an exercise intervention. This was a single experiment on one day for these individuals. So when we're trying to think like, ooh, what does this maybe open doors to for not only protein feeding and frequency, but yeah, like implication for longer term training adaptations and what happens in that context. But still, you know, these weren't trained athletes. They were young and so forth, and no women included. So we've got a lot of questions, I think, that pop up from this study, even though it's answering some other questions.
Yeah, it is. And this is, you know, like, I see this more as a pilot study, which gives us kind of a, not us, but researchers kind of a starting point into designing more studies, which we'll see come out now in the future, because this has gotten so much interesting press. So we'll definitely keep up on this research. But, you know, a couple things, here's what I want to do, Dee. I want you to pick some populations where you were like, when you were reading this paper, you're like, well, but what about blank, blank, blank? So yeah. My what about blank, blank, blank was, what about master's athletes? Like, we know that sometimes we actually reduce our caloric intake as we get older, but we know we do need more protein. So would this be valid for our master's athletes? And then, of course, I think about younger athletes, you know, are developing our prepubertal or pubertal athletes, where there's no way this is going to happen. And then, you know, I also think about longevity. If we're not talking about athletes specifically, but longevity, there's a lot of press on mTOR and the mTOR pathway, which is the protein synthesis pathway, basically. And, you know, we've talked about leucine stimulating mTOR. And in the longevity space, there's a lot of discussion that maybe you shouldn't activate mTOR all the time, right? Yeah. So there's all of these, those are the ones that came to mind immediately when I was reading this. Mm-hmm. How about you?
Similarly, and adding in, like, for our women in perimenopause into postmenopause years, just with this big shift in hormonal status, I will call it, with regard to estrogen, progesterone. And even within a menstrual cycle, I know it's not a massive thing, but there is a difference with protein oxidation in a higher hormone phase of the menstrual cycle. But then when you think of the aging context with women specifically, I'm just wondering implications there. And then I think just thrown in, maybe expanding what you were mentioning earlier, is just like for the endurance athlete specifically versus strength, resistance, power kind of athletes, or this recovery nutrition protocol that might emerge. Like, how's mm-hmm. that going to affect if we're not doing specifically the resistance exercise? Is there any need to do a higher protein intake beyond maybe like 40 grams, for example?
Yeah, because we know we need to increase the protein. Most people need to increase their protein already. But yeah, is there, what's the difference between 40 and 100? Now that's huge. Like, 30 to 40, I feel is like, it's manageable. That's easy, right? And even 40 to 50 is a big jump, but 40 to 100, that's a big one. Yeah. Well, and, you know, the other implications, as I'm sitting here sipping on my 50 gram protein shake, you know, more other implications is, let's just think about food, right? So they used a milk protein concentrate. So they used was it a powder or was it a liquid? I think it was a powder. Right.
I think it was a powder that they made water, but
so think of protein powder, right? So I'm thinking, like, the protein powder I have, you know, it's 25 grams of protein per scoop, and those are big scoops, right? And I'm like, I was going to do that this morning, but I'm like, no way. I'm just going to get it from different sources, right? But I spread it out, basically. It's the same thing. I've used protein powder. I just didn't put it all in one thing. But let me just also put the highlight on food. So 100 grams of protein. How do we get 100 grams of protein? Well, for our most omnivore athletes who are listening, 100 grams of protein equals 12 and a half cups of milk. Let that sit in for a second. 12 and a half cups. That's why they used a powder, obviously.
Yeah.
100 grams of protein is about 17 eggs. Can you imagine eating 17 eggs at once? 12 and a half ounces of chicken. So if we put that into my hand model, that's about two handfuls of chicken, which that's a hearty amount of chicken, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know, if we kind of, you know, put it into like a meal, and I kind of created this just off the whim, but like, and this is animal-based, so my apologies for our plant-based athletes listening, animal-based meal, to make 100 grams of protein, you're talking 4 eggs, 3 meatballs, 2 slices of turkey bacon, 3 ounces of turkey breast, and 3 ounces of tuna. Now, maybe some people following the carnivore diet could pull that off, but I tell you what, just based on how full I feel right now, Dee, consuming this. Now, granted, it is fluid based too. It's not food, so yeah. The fluid is also distending my stomach. This has been a little tricky. I think the implications of eating that much protein after exercise, when in fact sometimes actually exercise suppresses our hunger response, so we don't feel like consuming anything. There's another thing, another monkey wrench to throw in that.
Totally.
But again, totally appreciate where this is coming from. What else do you have for us, Dee?
Oh, well, you know, you were just given some amounts, examples for us to visualize how much protein that is. I just put in to my chronometer lentils, cooked lentils, to get 100 grams of protein, 5.5 cups cooked.
What?
Of lentils. That's what it's saying here.
And we've got a lot of fiber with that too.
There's a whole lot of fiber, plus it's giving you a bunch of carbohydrate, over 1200 calories. So fiber would be over 60 grams. So, I mean, this is not going to happen. Ooh.
No, no. Which is why they do this in a laboratory setting.
Yes.
Right? With engineered foods.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can call it food, it's right. But no, like I said, I don't want to dog this at all. And I'm not, please don't think this is any negative. There's no negativity.
Way.
I love what they're doing and opening the doors to this, because we're so protein rich and our message is always about protein, 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 because not a lot of us get enough of protein. Right. And, but again, we have to remember that it's not just about one nutrient, right? Listeners, it's about carbs. It's about fat. It's about fluids. It's about all these other nutrients. But again, just kind of, you know, summing up this research, I love that they basically are challenging that consuming more protein in one setting can actually prolong the anabolic response, right? When measured in a longer time period. And that's kind of what they were looking at, is like, let's feed more, measure longer, and see what's happening. So, of course, we'll see a lot of studies branch off to this. I think this is hugely positive for not only the sport nutrition field, but I think nutrition in general for healthy aging, for certain individuals, maybe not for others. Like, and I think there are some limitations, but I think there are so many positives to this for sure.
Yeah. And just along with that, adding on, Bob, I mean, it is a bigger amount of protein. It did take longer to digest, absorb. But in the end, they did find, like when we were talking about wasted protein or wasted amino acids, I believe I saw that of that 100 grams, at the end of the time point they were measuring, 85% of that was used for muscle protein synthesis.
Yes.
So it's not a lot wasted.
No. And that's what they didn't know, right? Because they were thinking, oh, of course, if you feed, you know, four times the amount, you're going to have four times the waste. But it actually wasn't. That's the cool part, I think, right? As long as you can consume 100 grams.
I can't wait to see what comes out of this researcher's lab next, or what other researchers out there are now.
Maybe we can get our hands on one of the researchers and chat with them. That would be totally cool on a future episode. But so, listeners, we'll go ahead and drop the study, this research paper, in our show notes. So if you want to geek out and look at all the fancy charts and read about this, that would be great. We'll go to our website and our show notes there. And, you know, stay tuned for the future. We'll definitely keep you apprised in terms of future research that comes out of this, and because we're going to definitely keep up with this. And just as a note, I have successfully finished consuming 85 total grams of protein in about 2 hours time. So it wasn't all in one bolus. Obviously, I feel extremely full right now, but there was fluid involved in that also. It's obviously difficult to consume protein powder without fluid, but I tried to minimize the fluid as much as possible. I don't know how I'm going to feel later. I have an extremely full stomach. I don't feel like I could do any type of activity, probably without vomiting right now. So It's not the most uncomfortable feeling, but it's definitely not the most comfortable feeling.
Oh my gosh, Bob. Well, thanks for being the guinea pig for us all this morning. And we won't ask you to do 100 grams of protein next time. We will, keep it a little bit more reasonable, but to be determined what we do with all of this.
Well, D, I still have 15 grams, so I might go eat a few eggs.
Ooh, I dare you. A double dog dare you.
All right, listeners, we'll stay tuned to our next episode. And thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you, and we'll catch you on the next one.
All right. Hopefully you did enjoy that episode. If you made it this far, hey, you are amazing. And thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned for next week's episode, which we are super excited for, a conversation with Dr. Dan Plews, who is a applied sports scientist, researcher, coach out of New Zealand. He's also himself a phenomenal triathlete. You may have heard of him or know of him well after he broke the amateur record, the Ironman World Championships in Hawaii in 2018. Amazing 8-hour, 24-minute finish. So we're going to meet with Dan and talk about nutrition, some of his research and perspectives. If you've got a sports nutrition question you'd like to send us, please drop it via email, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com, or visit the website insidesportsnutrition.com, and you'll see a link there to submit a question. As always, we do love your support in promoting this podcast, and if you would be so kind to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or both, and a review over on Apple Podcasts, a favorable one would be amazing. It does help us grow and continue to share our content with other listeners around the world, and we greatly appreciate that. If you're looking for information on the services that Bob and I provide respectively, you can reach out to Bob over at energyperformance.com, energyperformance.com, or myself, Dina, over at nutritionmechanic.com. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.